Now we'd like to turn this morning to the prophecy of Haggai. We're going to read in the last three prophecies in the Old Testament. Just a very brief reading from each of them. The prophecy of Haggai, and we're going to read in chapter 1. And verse number 3. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways. Verse 7. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways. Verse 9. You looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when you brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and you run every man unto his own house. Now to the prophecy of Zechariah, please. And again in chapter 1. And verse number 16. Therefore thus saith the Lord, I am returned to Jerusalem with mercies. My house shall be built in it, saith the Lord of hosts, and a line shall be stretched forth upon Jerusalem. Verse 18. Then lifted I up mine eyes and saw, and behold, four horns. And I said unto the angel that talked with me, What be these? And he answered me, These are the horns which have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. And the Lord showed me four carpenters. Then said I, What come these to do? And he spake, saying, These are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head, but these are come to fray them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lifted up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter it. Now then the same prophecy, please, just over to chapter 14, just to the last chapter, and verse number 4. And this feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west, and there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south. Verse 9. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall there be one Lord, and his name one. Just a verse or two then from the prophecy of Malachi, and we'll read it again in the first chapter. Prophecy of Malachi, and again in chapter 1. Verse 1, the burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi, I have loved you, saith the Lord, yet ye say, Wherein hast thou loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith the Lord, yet I loved Jacob. And I hated Esau, and laid his mountains and his heritage waste for the dragons of the wilderness. Verse number 6. A son honoureth his father, and a servant his master. If then I be a father, where is mine honour? And if I be a master, where is my fear? Saith the Lord of hosts unto you, O priests that despise my name. And ye say, Wherein have we despised thy name? blessing that the Lord will suffice for our reading. With the Lord's blessing. I would like this afternoon to interest you in something of the ministry and the message that comes to us from the three prophets that we find at the end of our Old Testament. I want to link today their time with ours in a very simple sense. And I want us all to see and to understand that just as they were living their life at the end of a dispensation of law, you and I today are living our lives at the end of a dispensation of grace. And I want us to see that the features that mark the end of a dispensation of law are the very same features that mark the end of the dispensation of grace. And one of the things that's very important in life, and sadly it is so difficult to learn, is that it is possible to repeat the failures of a previous generation. And as we retrace the history of Israel, one of the saddest things I think in all their historical account is this, that they kept making the same mistakes over and over again. The Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw said on one occasion, he said, if history repeats itself and the unexpected always happens, how incapable man must be of learning from experience. Now isn't that true in Christian experience? So Haggai, Zechariah and Malachi are writing at the very end of a dispensation of law. And you and I are living at the very close of the dispensation of grace. And we want to ask a very simple question. What relevance has the ministry that they gave then for our lives that we live today? I spent a very enjoyable weekend some time ago with the saints at Blue Waters in Hamilton. And we looked at these prophets and we looked at the diversity of their ministry. But I want today to look specifically at their ministry. Not so much at its variety, but I want just to see very simply, very pointedly, what they have got to say. Now, let's just fill for a moment in the history. How did we arrive to this point? Where exactly on the scene are these men ministering? These men are long past the days of Moses and the deliverance from Egypt. These men are long past the days when David sat upon the throne of Israel. These men have on in time from the day when Solomon enlarged the kingdom and silver was as nothing for the amount of gold. Where are these men now? These men are living at a day far down the course of history. After the death of Solomon and the dividing of the kingdom, there followed in Israel, there followed kings, and they were all bad. From Solomon down the line from Jeroboam the first, he was the first, and there were 18 more kings, and they were all bad. And finally, they just all end up in the land of Assyria, and they end up in the land of captivity. The nation of Judah fared little better. The two tribes again, from Rehoboam. After him there followed 18 kings, and there were more good than bad. Sorry, I should have said there were more bad than good. And finally, they too were all carried away to the land of Babylon, to the land of captivity. I want you just to notice a number. A number. In the book of Samuel, we are reminded that the tribes were numbered. And what did they find? They found that in Israel, there were 800,000 men that drew swords. and of Judah. There were 500,000 men. Now we come to Haggai's day and Zechariah's day. And after 70 years of captivity, they're returning to Jerusalem. The Bible gives us a number. The number that came up with Zerubbabel. And then the servants are added in. And then the singers are added in. And the number doesn't even reach 50,000. What a sad scene. And it is to these people returning from captivity to desolation that upon the scene there comes Haggai and Zechariah to minister to them the word of God. You may not all agree with me, but am I not safe in saying today that as far as assembly testimony is concerned, for the vast majority of us this afternoon, there has been better days. There has been greater numbers. But the ministry of Haggai to these people, dejected and despairing, was this. He says, God is with you. God is with you. You might have changed, and you might have departed, and you might have known his chastising hand. But he said, God is still with you. God is still with you. And the house of God is going to be built. And what is the ministry of Haggai? Haggai's ministry is to people to build again the house of God. In building the house of God, there were discouragements. There was a long delay. Then there was a restart. I don't want to give you all the details this afternoon, but I want you to notice now the content of the ministry of Haggai. What is it? Listen to what he says. Consider your ways. Consider your ways. We don't sometimes like rebuke. I find more and more as life goes on, people don't like things to be too pointed. Society's getting like that. People like things that are vague and nothing just too much to the point and nothing too personal. I don't know how they will take into Haggai's ministry. He comes onto the scene and he says, is it time for you to dwell in your sealed houses and this house lie waste? Now therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Consider your ways. You say, what a lazy lot. What a lazy lot. Why weren't they getting on with the building of the house of God? No, no. It's not laziness that has afflicted. It's not that they weren't doing anything. What has happened to these people is this. They have lost their sense of priority. Is that not a very telling message for us as we enter the year 2007? Could we not lift down at the end of the dispensation of grace and read a man who wrote at the end of the dispensation of law and ask our hearts today, have we lost our sense of priority? You see, they were building their houses. I have no doubt that God wanted his people to dwell in houses. They were getting on with their lives. I have no doubt that God wanted them to get on with their lives. But the difficulty, as Haggai addressed the people in Jerusalem, was this. They were building their own houses at the expense of the house of God. They were getting on with their own lives. And they were neglecting the things of God. And Haggai says,
Consider your ways. The ministry of this man, to paraphrase it maybe in my simple mind, is this. Haggai would say, first things first.
I wonder how you and I are getting on at putting first things first. I have to make a little confession today, and it's this. In one sense, I have enjoyed reading all of the minor prophets. But in another sense, I have found them to be very sad. And I have to look within today and hear Haggai at the end of a previous dispensation. And he says, consider your ways. I have to consider my ways today. And indeed I have been considering them before I ever came along to this meeting. And I hear the voice of Haggai down through the time. And it's fresh today. And it's as important today as it was then. Consider. Do it. It's not that God doesn't want you to have a house. No, no. That's not the point. It's not that God doesn't want you to draw aside a while and have a rest. And enjoy your holiday. It's not that God doesn't want you to enjoy your family and your children and your grandchildren. You see, so much ministry can be negative. The point in Haggai is positive. It's getting priorities right. It's considering our ways. And what is a great priority in life? For them, it is the building of the house of God. If I were to speak to you today during the interval in the conference meeting, and I not embarrass you in any way, I wouldn't do it. But if I were to, and I were to draw alongside you and say to you today, what is your number one priority in life? What would you say? What is it that occupies your mind? What is it that really takes your attention? I know there are people who employ, and I know what a busy employment scene today, and I know what it is to have been in employment and work 60 hours a week. I know of those pressures. But what's the overriding factor in it? What's the number one priority? Haggai says, it's the house of God. What was this ministry? This was a practical ministry. To fill their hands and their hearts. If you were to read the historical account, these books are closely linked with the books of Ezra and Nehemiah and Esther. You would notice that these men ministered. And the people prospered under the ministry of Haggai and Zechariah. And eventually the house of God was finished. It was a ministry that was effective. And why was the ministry effective? Because the people gave heed to it. And they built the house of God. I want to come to Zechariah. I sometimes wonder in my mind, as I read him, why they ever call him a minor prophet. He's anything but minor. And we're not going to go into all the details today. But I want us to notice now, generally speaking, the ministry of Zechariah. He was a parallel with Haggai. They ministered together. This man certainly had a very, very different style. If you want to think about style, you could think about Haggai being pointed, pithy, personal. You could think about Zechariah being prophetic. Picture. He gives the whole panoramic view of the wonderful work of God. But that's not what's on my mind for the conference meeting today. Zechariah brings two things into view for the people of Israel and the Israelites. He brings into view their fortune and their future.
Many people today engaged in fortune telling. Fortune telling. You know, every believer in this meeting should read the prophecy of Zechariah. Because if you read the prophecy of Zechariah, you too would get a little grasp of your fortune and of the future. See, I didn't realize it had anything to do with us. Before I'm finished today, I hope to impress upon you that there's something very valuable for us. And we're not going to mix up the dispensations or mix up the church in Israel or anything like that. But there's a far deeper lesson in these prophecies. And sadly, they are oft times missed. You say, what about their fortune? The stones and the rubble are all around them. Jerusalem's in desolation. There's little to encourage. And there's less than 50,000 returned in that first swathe with Zerubbabel. What does Zechariah say? Well, in chapter 1, he brings to them a very important message. And what does he say in chapter 1? Well, he speaks about horses and myrtle trees and those that are going to and fro through all the earth. And what's the lesson? The Lord is returned to Jerusalem of mercy. What's he saying? He says your fortune's about to change. You've had years in Assyria. You've had 70 years in Babylon. You've come back to waste and destruction. He says, I want to tell you this. Your fortune's about to change. God is going to visit Jerusalem with mercy. He brings in the four that we read about just further down the chapter. The four horns. Those that oppress Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. He says they're going to be free. God's going to deal with your enemies. If we had read into the beginning of chapter 2, there's a man with a measuring line. And Jerusalem's going to be inhabited as towns without walls. He says your fortune's going to change. I wonder, dear believer, do you ever understand today that very soon your fortune and mine's about to change? About to change. You see, we get so earthbound. And we get so taken up with living. And we get so taken up with the job and the mortgage and the family. And all those things are important. The Lord is coming. And very soon you and I are going to be with him and we're going to be like him. Our fortune is very soon going to change. But then from the ministry of Zechariah, what does he say then? He takes them on to the future. To the future. You can debate now, and I'm not going to go into the details today. You can debate in those opening visions, there are 8 of them altogether. You can debate as to whether all the fulfillment happened in their day, or whether they just had a little bit of it, and it's all for the future. I'm inclined to think that they saw a little of it. They saw a little of it. But I do believe that in a grander scale of things, the best of it is yet to come. Jerusalem's glory day is yet to come. And those running in the streets of Jerusalem, and 10 men running for the skirt of him that is a Jew and saying, we want to go with you. God is with you. That day is yet to come. And he lifts up their minds and he takes them on to the future. That's a very strange thing. 2,000, we'll give it a round figure just for counting. About 2,500 years ago, there was a man ministered to people about events. They haven't even taken place. In fact, if I'm right in thinking, they'll be just a wee while yet in taking place. And you see, if Haggai's ministry was to fill their hands, Zechariah's ministry was to fill their hands. I wonder this afternoon, what about our vision? Have we lost the vision? Have we lost sight of the future? Have we become so earthbound and got so burdened down and had lost sight of this wrath. Our fortune was here. And our future is absolutely glorious. He takes them on to the coming of the Messiah. He reminds them about the priest upon the throne. Christ wearing the mitre and the crown. Jerusalem at peace. And the day when his feet will touch the Lord of all. What a day. And he says the Lord will be king over all the earth. What an incentive. What were they to grasp? Well, they were to grasp this. That they were just filling in their little niche. And the overall program of God. And I want to say this afternoon, what are you and I doing in the British Isles today? We're just filling in our little niche. And the overall program of God. But the problem is this now. You can be so burdened with your little bit that you miss the whole. Let me give you an example. Can you imagine going along to a car assembly plant? I've never been to one. But I would love to go sometime. To see the metal coming in at one end and all the people down the production line and the robotic arms and so on. And then right at the end, there's a vehicle comes out. And there's a man gets in. And he turns the ignition. There it is. The finished product. Even down the production line, I worked with a man and worked in one of these plants many years ago before they were all automated. And his job was just to spot weld the driver's door of Jaguar cars. And every car that came past, three little spots. One, two, three. And then he waited for the next machine. And he just did the same thing. One, two. Maybe that's like assembly line. The remembrance me. The ministry me. The gospel me. The Bible me. Then next week's the same. The remembrance week. The ministry week. And the gospel week. The Bible week. You go along to this man and you say, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just spotlighting. Is that all you're doing? Oh, no. Oh, no. You see, this car's coming down the lane. And my part here is absolutely there. Because if my part here isn't filled in, this whole process just drains to a halt. I want you to appreciate today that your little sphere in the service of God is absolutely vital. And the only reason you and I are here today, and the only reason that you and I are living in this world bearing testimony for God is this. He has ordained it so that you and I would carry out his purpose in this world because if it pleased him to do it himself, he could dispense with us all. But you see, he didn't design to do it that way. He designed that mere mortals, redeemed by grace, saved by the precious blood of Christ, indwelt by the power of the Holy Spirit, should bear testimony in this world. Oh, but listen, it's not just now. God's program didn't start this morning on the 1st of January 2007. Not at all. It has been ongoing. And it'll not finish when this conference meeting is finished this afternoon. It'll be ongoing. What is the ministry of Zechariah? It's a ministry to fill the eye. To show them the overall program of God. To encourage them to fit in their little niche. And to carry on to know that the fortune will change. And the final conclusion will be grand. and they'll have a party. See there, that's all very well, but what about us? Well, when God saved you, I hope you learned that you came into the family of God. That was a wonderful thing, into the family of God. And you had the privilege that you never knew before of calling God Father. That's a wonderful thing. Maybe after a little while when we got saved, I remember going along to conference meetings and I learned then that I was not only in the family of God, but I learned that we were in the body. The body. Learned a little about the truth of the one body. But then as life went on, and maybe even yet, I'm just beginning to grasp and to learn something of the wonder of kingdom truth. I want you to grasp this afternoon. We are children in the family. We are members in the body. But we are subjects in the kingdom. That is why Zechariah is important to us. I was greatly encouraged when our brother gave out this opening hymn. And listen to what verse number 4 says. Horatius honors him. Her bridal attire. Her festal array. All nature shall wear on that glorious day. Her king cometh down. With his people to reign. And his presence shall bless her. Even again. What does it say, Paul writing to Timothy? He says that we suffer with Christ. We remain with him. We remain with him. Peter says, if we are partakers of Christ's suffering, he says, when the glory will be to you, my sins you'll be glad. All those that have part in the first resurrection will live on the name of Christ. What you're going to say to me just now, and I know what you're thinking, you say, how will it all happen? Will we be up there, or will we be down here? I went for tea last night, and a brother said something, and I'm going to say it to you now, and I'll not tell you who it was, but you know what he said? He said at tea last night, the problem sometimes with believers is this, we major on minor. That is, we miss the big picture because of a minor problem. I have no idea of all the details and all the things that will happen, but my Bible says, if we suffer with him now, when he reigns, we'll reign with him. That is, we'll be associated with Christ in glory. And every believer today will be glad when he comes to reign. Zechariah's minister, tell her I, and get us occupied with the big picture. And just this afternoon, you think about these men, encouraging them at the end of the dispensation of law. Get on with the work of God, Haggai says. Keep building. Get the priorities there. Zechariah would say, don't just look down at the rubble in the building, but look up. The fortune will soon change. And the future is glorious. And Christ will reign. This is our little part now. It's just a little part in the overall plan. And he says, we'll be there. And the king will reign. And there'll be one law over all the earth. Maybe a generation or two later, Malachi, he comes in. And he's got a ministry as well. The ministry of Malachi. And you, it's a difficult one. It's a sad one. But there's one thing that there's no question about, and it's this. It is the love of God. The love of God. I have loved you, saith the Lord. This is Jehovah himself, really, speaking to these people. And he's speaking to them through the prophet. And it comes as a direct discourse, really, to them. I have loved you, saith the Lord. And 8 times in this book, every time God speaks, someone to say. And ye say. Ye say. Ye say. I have loved Jacob.
and I did it easy. I want you to notice now, God didn't say this in Genesis 25. You know, there's a great thing about politicians today, and it's this, and they say, we've been quoted out of context. The very same is true of God. God is often quoted out of context. When those twins were born, God didn't say, Jacob have I loved, and Esau have I hated. God said, the elders are certain. But mind you, many years have passed. And many situations have come and gone. And the character of two has been displayed. And now God says, Jacob have I loved, and Esau have I. Someone came along, I think it was Arthur G. Clarke, and they said to Arthur G. Clarke, they said, you know, there's a tremendous problem in Malachi 1 and verse number 3. Arthur G. Clarke said, what's the problem? Well, he said, God says, I hated Esau. Oh no, Arthur G. Clarke says, that's not a big problem. He said, there's a far bigger problem in the prophecy of Malachi. He said, what is that? He said, it's Malachi 1 and verse 2. What's that? I loved you. I loved you. Oh, no wonder, Albert. It's not that God hated Esau in the sense of all that he was and his ways. Because remember, Esau is Edom. That's the secret of it. It's two nations. It's two peoples. It's two cities. It's two ideals opposed the one to the other. And Arthur G. Clarke says, the greatest problem of it is this. I have loved you. Why did God ever love you? He loved them because he loved them. Tell me this afternoon. Why did God ever love you and I? He loved us because he loved us. The love of God is unquestionable. And yet they forgot that he really loved me. I wonder, do we really remember today that God has redeemed us? And he's reconciled us. And he's justified it. And he's brought us into his family. And he's brought us to himself. And he can say to us today personally, I have loved you. I have loved you. What's the problem in Malachi? Problem in Malachi is that they forgot the love of God. And they forgot his things. And two generations after they were lifted up and encouraged under the ministry of Haggai and Zechariah, just about two generations, the whole thing is slipping away. Slipping away. I feel a great burden today in the session. Conference meetings that we enjoy. Assembly gatherings that we appreciate. Brethren and sisters, can I say this to you today? There's a great danger the whole thing can just slip away. Slip away. That's the problem. That's the problem in Malachi. I grew up in the 1970s. Money wasn't as plentiful now as it was then. There was a neighbour of ours, a man by the name of Stuart, and it's maybe not legal and wasn't then anyway and probably isn't now, but they hadn't money to repair old cars. If the rear light lens got broke, you just painted the indicator one orange and you painted the brake one red and you just carried on. And everything was fine if you had a black bonnet and maybe an SPP sticker on it, you know. They were just like boy racers. But I remember one day, he was leaning and looking into the engine of an old Ford Anglia. And I remember saying to him, what's wrong? He said, it's heartbroken. You see, he'd painted up the light bulbs for a little while, touched up the paintwork as best he could, gave it the superficial attention. But as he looked into the engine, he realized, now, this is more serious. This is heartless. What's wrong with the people in Malachi's day? You say, where did they go wrong in Malachi's day? Will a man rob God? Did they go wrong in tithes and offerings? No. They said the table of the Lord is contemptible. Is that where they went wrong? No. They despised his name. Is that where they went wrong? No. They departed out of the way. Is that where they went wrong? No. In the prophecy of Malachi, they went wrong at the very beginning. Listen to what it says. I have loved you, saith the Lord. Yet ye say, wherein hast thou loved me? I went to pick up a brother in a meeting. He lives in a nursing home in the Isle of Man. I went to pick him up the other Lord's Day morning. And just as I rounded the corner going toward the nursing home, there was a man walking across a green with a bundle of Sunday newspapers under his arm. And I could have wept. He once sat amongst the saints. He once remembered the Lord. And as I've been reading these epistles, these prophecies, and thinking about this meeting, I thought to myself, problem is, it's hard. Brothers and sisters today, what about us? What about the heart? You see, some people want to return to brethrenism. In the government, they're talking about returning to Victorian values. What's the link between these three post-exile prophets? The link is this. Haggai, God says, I smote you with blasting and mildew and hail. But he says, he didn't return unto you. Zechariah, turn unto me, saith the Lord of hosts. Malachi, oh, listen to it this afternoon. Return unto me, and I will return unto you. Oh, there needs to be a returning. But to what? To the Lord. To the Lord. Where did this all go wrong? They had a wonderful ministry in their hands. They had a wonderful ministry to fill their eyes. They had a wonderful ministry that should have filled their heart. The trouble was, they were wrong in heart. And they went away from God. Can we not learn from the prophets at the end of the dispensation of law these practical, important lessons? May we have our hands filled to labor for God, to get our priorities, to keep in view the greater picture of the program of God, and to ever see to it that in heart we be faithful to the Lord. Lest we get away just as we are. And we got away, and away, and away. And for 400 years, the divine letter is safe. Oh, that we would be just as Darby and visited in that wonderful hill. And is it so we shall be like thy son, he said, the heart dissatisfied can ask no more. All thought of self is now forever o'er. Christ, its unmingled object, and the heart. Maybe today keep our eye on Christ. Yes, fill our hands with the work of God. Fill our eye with the program of God. But fill our hearts with thoughts of Christ. And maybe be preserved from making the mistakes at the end of a dispensation of grace. That they may at the end of a dispensation of law.
Thank you.